You just told me I have a cereal body.
Listen. Right. That's a fair assessment, okay? When I walk into a room and I'm like, mm-hmm, he's eating Jo-O's. When I can recognize the scent, the smell of the cereal you are eating.
Yeah.
You eat too much cereal. That's what
that
means. That
cereal body.
No, I walked That's out my... and I was like, oh, I'm going to start dinner soon. I'm sorry. Are you hungry? You're like, no. But you're making a big bowl of cereal.
But what cereal body do I have? Like Tony the Tiger? That's kind of dope.
No, I just mean a body made up mostly of cereal.
So kind of like the fat old man with the Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
A little bit. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, I just feel like you're, as much as I try to be like, let's try different recipes and let's mix things up a little bit, I'll turn around and you'll still have a fucking bowl of the same goddamn cereal. And I'm just like, there's fruit and there's carrots and Fruit there's Loops. Snacks and there's just tons of stuff.
What's your favorite
you
cereal?
Always want, oh my God, this is not, we're not going to do this.
We talk about cereal killers.
Cinnamon. The cinnamon.
You like anything cinnamon.
Yeah, that's
But fair. You like Cinnamon Toast Crunch and you like Cinnamon Life.
So I'm super weird. I like the super flavorful like cinnamon ones, but then also like as generic, like the Life plain as you can get. If it tastes a little bit like cardboard, I'm into it.
Okay.
But this is Shadows on the Wall, a scary story podcast.
Cereal on the
if
Wall.
If that intro...
Yeah, three off.
Three
off a little bit. What am I listening
to? Didn't convey what
I mean,
listening
I'm riveted,
to.
But what is this? I remember, can I just say this one thing? Yeah. I have always been obsessed with cereal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was, just a lad... my mom and I ate so many boxes of Cheerios so that we could send away for a spoon that says, Richard did it.
Aww.
And I still have it here in LA with me.
That's the cutest.
We worked real hard. I think it was a lot of boxes of cereal.
I'm sure she could have just bought it for much, much cheaper than what she spent on the cereal.
Absolutely. But it was
that's
a bonding
really
experience.
Cute. Aww.
I did it. She
did
helped.
What though? Just like eat a shit ton of cereal?
Yeah, that's literally, it just says Richard did it, exclamation point. Richard did it!
You kind of get to like add in whatever it is you want that you get to.
Cereal. Anyway.
So I go first.
What do you get a little tease.
Yeah. No, well, I go first, so I don't really need to tease it. I'm going to tell it. But you're just holding your hand over your boob. Are you okay? Is that cereal getting to
heart
you?
Palpitations from all this cereal.
Yeah, it's because you just downed that massive bowl.
Yeah, because we were about to start recording.
Yeah, no one had a gun to our head and was like, you have to record in the next 2 minutes. You take that upon yourself.
Well, my story is part one of two. And
no, don't do this to us.
But this one was a clear delineation because I feel like the first half is this conspiracy murder story that they've tried to hide for a long, long time.
Ooh, okay.
And then the second half is kind of the ghost story that follows, so...
All right. So you're doing like kind of what I do, but you're breaking it up into two so you can do less research for next week.
I guess.
I see
Spread
you.
It out.
Uh-huh, I see you.
But I will say, let me just say this before you get into your story.
Mm-hmm.
I picked my story tonight because I thought that it would terrify you.
Ooh.
Specifically.
That's love. I was like, what would really just scare the shit
just
out of her?
Fuck
so
her
when she
up,
has
yeah.
to go home alone, this is all she thinks about. Well, my own story did that to me.
Ooh,
so,
all right, get into it, girl.
So I titled mine 53 Days.
53 Shades.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Is that what I said?
No.
No, what did I said?
What did I said? 53 thoughts.
Come on. This story, you might have heard the story. It's real. Okay. I don't even know. I'm just going to get into it.
Get into
it. Yeah. It's a little rough. 53 days. I got this from abcnews.go.com. Yeah. Wikipedia and rebelcircus.com. It was a lovely May day in 1980. High school teacher Mary Stauffer, and I really hope I'm saying her name right. I should have looked it up. That's on me. No, go ahead. Make a bunch of noise while I'm starting my story. That's fine. Yep. Go ahead and drink. Move the mic away from your face while you're gulping water. Oh my God. You.
Continue.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I would hate if you did this to me. So.
Yeah, I know. And this story is important. So are you done?
Okay, I'm done. Okay. Let's go.
Here we go.
Mary Stauffer.
Oh my God, I just inhaled.
Are you done?
Such a big chunk of my own baby powder that I just put on.
Your own baby powder. Okay. It's out there now. Now they know.
Ooh. Yeah, works. Here we go. So Mary decided to take her 8-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, to a nearby salon to get a haircut. Once finished, the two are walking back to their vehicle when out of nowhere, a man appears, holds up a gun, and says that he needs a ride. Pointing the gun at young Elizabeth, the man orders Mary to get behind the wheel. They go to a remote wooded area where he orders her to pull over. The man then bound the hands of Mary and Elizabeth and led them to the trunk of the car, forcing them in. The two lay face down and began to pray, which the man hears and was afraid that others could hear, so he pulls over again, opens the trunk, and angrily tells the two to be quiet, wrapping duct tape around their faces before driving off yet again. Mary set to work right away, trying to free the ties around her daughter's hands, but the car stops suddenly again, this time at a park. The trunk was opened, and the man, seeing that the young girl was partially free, was furious. He began threatening them, which gets the attention of two little boys who are playing nearby. Little Jason Wilkman, just 6 years old, walks up to the car to see what is going on.
Damn.
Yeah, he ain't having it.
Fuck, I'm impressed already.
The man snatches Jason up and throws him in the trunk of the car as well, where Mary tries to comfort him. Once again, the car starts off down the road, and once again, it comes to an abrupt stop. The man opens the trunk, yanks Jason out, and slams it shut. When the trunk was opened again, the two females were at the man's house. Meanwhile, Jason's friend, the other little boy who had been in the park with him, ran home, telling his parents that a man took Jason away in a car. Police were notified, and they soon realized there was a possible connection between Jason's kidnapping and the disappearance of a woman and her young daughter. Mary's husband, Irv, back at the house with the couple's other child, Steve, had begun to worry. Little did he know that his wife and daughter were just 6 miles away, now blindfolded, chained, and shackled together. Back at the house, the man, Ming, locked both Mary and Elizabeth in a small closet. There was a rug on the floor and 2 small pillows. The doorknob had been removed from the inside, and Mary knew instantly that this all had been planned. The next afternoon, Ming removed Mary from the closet that was just 21 inches wide and 4 feet long, and he brought her out into the living room and tied her to the furniture. He then began what felt like a twisted interview process, asking questions about her past as a math teacher and about where she had been living. This went on for hours. Finally, Ming, who was 29 at the time, revealed who he was. He had been Mary's algebra student 15 years ago and had been obsessed with her ever since.
Damn. That's fuck, man.
He told her.
She didn't recognize him?
No. Mm-hmm. He told her that she had given him a B in algebra, which had prevented him from going to college.
Oh.
He said he was then drafted in the Vietnam War, where he had become a POW. None of this was true. It was then that he raped her for the first time, videotaping it, a fact that Mary was not initially aware of. Over time, the sexual assaults escalated, but she managed to keep it all hidden from her daughter. He raped her daily, with each assault being more brutal than the last. He then started to demand that Mary show him affection while he was assaulting her, to which she said, quote, I love my husband, and I've promised to be true to him until death, and what you ask, I cannot do. That's when he said, okay, then you're going to watch your daughter suffocate to death. He brought Mary back to the closet and placed a clear plastic bag over Elizabeth's head. She watched as her child began to run out of air. Mary walked to Ming and kissed him on the cheek. He told her that wasn't good enough. She then kissed him on the lips. Ming removed the bag from Elizabeth's head. Mary and Elizabeth were fed twice a day and were not allowed to take a shower until their 10th day in captivity. That's when Ming began to loosen up, as Mary noted he was starting to return to his daily routine, rather than focusing all of his attention on her and her daughter. On their 23rd day of captivity,
jeez,
he took the two on a road trip to a job fair in Chicago. He locked them up with cables and hid them inside a rented Winnebago, even bringing paper, crayons, and board games for Elizabeth. He acted out a twisted version of a family's night together, making Elizabeth play a board game with him while Mary cooked them dinner. On day 53, Ming told Mary he was planning on buying a new camper for the three of them to live in together. That's when she realized he would never let them go. Then he did something unusual. He left both of them in the closet, chaining them together, before leaving from work. This was Mary's chance. She began trying to remove the hinge pin from the locked closet door, which she was eventually able to do. While chained together, the two made their way to the kitchen phone, called the police, and then hid behind a vehicle until the cops arrived. They had spent 7 weeks as Ming's prisoners and were finally free. Ming was arrested at work that day, and after his booking, he immediately offered another inmate, Richard Green, $50,000 to kill both Mary and Elizabeth so that they would not be able to testify against him. Richard called the FBI.
I mean, bravo, Richard.
I know. Ming's trial for the kidnapping of Mary and Elizabeth and the repeated sexual assaults on Mary began in 1980. Mary took the witness stand, detailing what he had done to her. Prosecutor Tom Berg was helping Mary along with her story of what had happened when he turned and saw Ming standing there, right behind him, headed for Mary. Tom grabbed onto Ming and stepped in front of him, blocking his path. There, right in front of the jury, the two men began to wrestle. Soon others joined in, and Ming was finally taken to the ground.
Wait, who is Tom?
One of the attorneys.
Oh, okay, just gotcha.
Kind of guiding her throughout this story, yeah, when Ming just gets up and starts at walking.
Her. Yeah.
He was found guilty on kidnapping and rape charges and sentenced to 30 years. Bullshit. Attention then turned to the little boy, Jason. Ming insisted he had dropped Jason off in a field. He was then offered a deal. Tell them what happened to the child and get a lesser charge. That's when Ming led them to Jason's body.
Fuck this guy, yeah.
Ming had beaten the 6-year-old boy to death with a metal rod.
He beat him to death?
Yeah. In 1981, he faced his second trial for the death of Jason. During this trial, in which Mary was bravely testifying yet again, Ming, who had managed to smuggle a knife into the courtroom, made another dash for her. This time, he was able to reach her. He slashed at her face with a knife before anyone could stop him. Her facial wound took 62 stitches to close.
Jeez.
He then promised he would kill her and her daughter when he was released from prison. He was sentenced.
Doubt that's happening.
He was sentenced to 40 years for the murder of Jason.
I'm sorry. 40 years?
To be served concurrently with his previous sentence.
How is that possible? You beat a child to death and then you attack the woman who's testifying against you. I mean, that's attempted murder right there in the courtroom.
It also left her permanently scarred.
I'm sure it did. 62 stitches.
On July 6th, 2010, Ming was eligible for parole. Less than 2 months later, a district judge ruled he was not eligible and should remain in jail as he was a threat to society. As if all this wasn't sad enough, this entire situation, the kidnapping, rapes, murder, everything, could potentially have been avoided. Now, Ming had been obsessed with Mary ever since he was in her class. He began sexually fantasizing about her and even wrote stories about these fantasies. He quickly realized these stories did not give him satisfaction, so he decided he would have to kidnap Mary so that he could act them out. In 1975, Ming believed he had found out where Mary and her husband lived in Minnesota and broke into the home, carrying a gun and fully intending to leave with Mary. However, she did not live there. Instead, her in-laws did. Ming forced them to the ground, tied them up, and said he would kill them if they ever reported the crime. Because of this threat, the in-laws didn't report it at the time. Only when Ming was kidnapped, which was 5 years later, did they say a man had broken into the home.
When Ming was kidnapped?
I'm sorry, when Mary was kidnapped.
Oh, okay.
5 years later, did they say a man had broken into the home looking for Mary? Ming then continued to search for Mary after this initial break-in, but she and her husband had moved to the Philippines, where they worked as Christian missionaries. In 1979, they had moved back to Minnesota. A year after they returned home, Ming found out that Mary was teaching at Bethel University and began to stalk her. He continued following her around until what he thought was an opportunity, seeing Mary alone with her daughter leaving a hair salon. Today, both Mary and Elizabeth are involved in advocacy organizations that deal with the victims of violent crimes. Mary even went so far as to meet with Ming's mother, saying the actions of her son in no way reflected on her as a mother and that she shouldn't feel responsible in any way for Ming.
I can't believe he got such a light sentence.
So fucked up.
I also can't believe someone hasn't killed him in prison.
For 53 days, they were just locked in a closet.
First of all, my opinion, rape should be life or a death sentence.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, your views on it, but the harshest punishment possible.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, taken way too lightly in our society, for sure. Yeah. And also that he was tormenting with her in this way where he was trying to convince himself that these were, like, consensual acts and he wanted her to be into it. Like, God, that's so fucked up. And then
he didn't rape the child, right?
No, okay. No. He was like acting like this was his,
that was his kid.
Daughter. Yeah. Oh my God, so messed up. And then the fact that he taped it,
yeah,
and then all of these tapes were found and like, you know.
And they gave him 30 years.
30 years for that.
That's insane. And 40 years for murdering a 6-year-old boy.
He should have gotten 30 years just for kidnapping two people and holding them hostage.
Yeah.
And then I think he should have got death for all of the rapes and 100% death for beating a child to death.
How do you get 40 years for that?
I don't know. I can't even fathom. I didn't even
and that,
say
that poor kid who was so brave and went
up there to find out. It's so sad. He just like heard people struggling and just went right over.
Well,
that story was really hard for me. There's something so sad and so fucked up, like taking them on this road trip and like making her cook dinner while he plays with her daughter. Like, oh yeah. My God. And that she's able to be, I mean, we definitely talk a lot of shit about religion, you know, but I think it's when it's used in like a cult form, you know, and used to like hurt people. Mm-hmm. But for her, definitely sounds like religion is kind of the thing that saved her and helped her get through this. And she kind of fell back on her faith and was able to kind of, you know, forgive and move on and reach out to his mom. I would not have been able to do that. I would feel like I would be so consumed. And also, I was so pissed off when doing the research. Like, she goes through all of this, her daughter as well, and the poor little boy. But she goes through all of this stuff. She takes the stand, which must have been so fucking hard to do. And he is able to reach her and attack her. Who wasn't fucking doing their job in this courtroom? Yeah. Like, the second he stood up, the cops in there should have shot him in the fucking head. Oh, I'm getting angry.
I agree. And I, you know, we do talk a lot about religion. I'm not an atheist by any stretch of the imagination. And I do believe that religion can do a lot of really great things and help people through a lot of trying times. And this is definitely a testament to that.
Yeah. I just feel like it's so funny how it can go in such a way.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, in that way, it is a lot. This is a weird comparison to make, and people might get on me about this, but but a lot like money, I think it amplifies what's already in you. Mm-hmm. If you have bad intentions, you're going to find a way to use religion for
evil.
Yeah, exactly, for evil.
Yeah.
And if you're a good person, then you'll find good things in your faith.
Exactly.
Okay, we got to... Man,
that's right.
That was a tough one to start with.
And the little...
I can't. Yep. Nope.
Okay.
You know what? I'll say this though. I'm glad you told that story because I think
have you never heard it?
I think it's. I have heard it.
Yeah.
But I think only because I'm from Minnesota.
Oh.
But I think it's good to. Go ahead.
I'll say it was a while ago. You don't remember anything from it, right? Mm-mm. I think it was before your time. I already can't remember the year. But
I do remember. I definitely heard
hearing
about
of it. Yeah.
But I think it's important to tell those stories because it's just. It just shows so many flaws in our, I think in our legal system. You look at
it's
the
really
sentences that...
And concurrently?
That's fucking
like,
ridiculous.
What?
He's going to serve 40 years.
Yeah, like what? If that.
I mean, thank goodness the other judge was like, no, he can't come out, you know? Okay.
But no, I think that someone should just pop into the prison he's in and be like, by the way, this kid... Or this guy killed a kid, kidnapped a kid, and repeatedly assaulted a woman.
Yep.
He wouldn't live through the day.
No, he'd be done. He'd be done. I'm sure he's sectioned off from...
Yeah, that's not fair.
Nah. Nah, man, you do
the
crime.
We're the wolves, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, don't
now
separate
we're just repeating,
them.
Now we're just repeating each other's.
We're just repeating each other's.
Okay.
Okay. The apartment massacre... Part one. This is for you, honey.
Thanks.
ForgottenHistory.com. They are, or Forgotten History, I'm sorry, not .com, .co. They are listening and Lost Virginia Files. Let me start by saying that researching this was a true pain, as there has been a great deal of effort to erase it from history.
Ooh.
In fact, one of the websites I was pulling information from, I shit you not, is no longer up. I was looking at it. I looked at it like a week ago, and then I went back to it right before yesterday, before we did this episode, before we got together, and it's not there anymore.
Oh, shit.
So,
do you think someone's going to come after us after this comes out?
No.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think they just deny it. But, so this is the story of the Virginia apartment massacre of 1979. Part one will be the actual killings. We'll discuss suspects and why this apartment complex was targeted. Part two will be the unexplainable deaths that occurred after the murders that many believe were caused by supernatural forces. Windsor Apartments, September 10th, 1979. Mary Buckley, 29, and her two children, Belle, 10, and David, 4, moved in after Mary's husband lost their life savings gambling and drinking and then decided to abandon his family on top of that.
Fuck this guy.
What a piece of shit. So this place wasn't great, but it was fine enough. Mary was being helped by her parents, who were taking care of the rent while she covered the cost of raising her kids. It was an 8-story complex with 10 units, 1- and 2-bedroom per floor. There were 2 fire escapes on the brown bricked outside and a single elevator in the front entryway. Inside, there was a short-haired blue carpet with gold markings in the halls, off-white walls, and the doors were brown painted metal. Over the next month, Mary met a few of her neighbors and seemed to be getting along with everyone quite well, according to her parents. In particular, she bonded with Elizabeth, or Bethy, who was 63 years old.
Oh, Bethy.
don't get attached.
Oh, my God!
Mary told her mom and dad that Bethy offered to watch the kids from time to time while she worked, and in exchange, Mary would help Bethy with her cleaning, as Bethy had a disease that curved her spine and made it difficult for her to look past horizontal. On October 18th, 1979, at approximately 2 a.m., Mary was actually over at Bethy's helping her do just that while her kids were sleeping at their apartment down the hall. Mary had just gotten off a shift at the hospital where she worked as an OB nurse, and Bethy had asked her to change a light bulb that had gone out on her way home. According to reports, Bethy had stepped out from her second floor apartment to use the vending machine in the lobby of the building. Upon nearing the elevator, she passed the stairs and saw the janitor, Alfonso Harian, I think it's Harian, 60, lying in a pool of blood on the lower landing. His throat had been slit so deep that his head was only attached by the skin on the back of his neck. The killer had cut around the throat and then stomped on the vertebrae that support the skull until they shattered.
Oh my God.
That's pretty, yeah, it gets worse. His shirt was torn open and some sort of symbol had been carved onto his chest. Bethy returned to her apartment and told Mary what she saw. Mary's first instinct was to return to her kids, who were asleep in the apartment down the hall.
Oh, shit.
She told Bethy to contact the police, but before she got out the door, Bethy picked up the phone and found that her line was dead. There was no dial tone at all, just silence. Obviously, back in the time of landlines.
That would be so scary.
Mm-hmm. Mary's hand was still on the doorknob when she felt someone slowly turning it from the outside. She quickly slid the door chain in place just as the door was being pulled open.
That's not going to stop anybody.
Sadly, the chain still allows the door to open a few inches, enough that the killer was able to lock eyes with Mary. He was wearing a Kermit the Frog mask.
Oh my God.
And a dark red suit. Mary was too frozen to move, giving the killer time to slide a hand past the chain door and stab her in the stomach, just under the ribs.
Shit.
Mary collapsed and the door was ripped open. The tall masked man did not know that Bethy was still in the apartment, nor did he know that the 5-foot-1-inch woman had a 6-shot revolver that she kept in her freezer.
Fuck yeah, Bethy.
Bethy shot him twice.
Damn.
Once in the neck and once in the eye.
Oh my God, good shots. Damn. I knew I liked her.
Bethy's a bit of a badass. Yeah. Like this little woman who can't stand up,
he's
can't
like,
see
I'll
past
fuck
horizontal.
You up.
Yeah. So we lose some time here because Mary was passed out. She claims to remember moments of light but didn't fully come to until nearly 3 a.m. She was low on blood. The color vanished from her skin and extremely weak. Still, the only thought she had was to get to her kids. She feared the worst. She stumbled into the hall.
Don't even tell me you're going out there without a knife. I feel like I'm watching a horror movie.
She didn't. She stumbled into the hall and felt something warm on her hand as she braced against it. She looked, struggling to focus, and saw that her hand was covered in blood. Mary thought it was her own until she looked down the hall and saw that they were covered in symbols similar to what was carved into the custodian's chest, all in blood. Police would later report that you couldn't step on the carpet without it bubbling up red liquid, which was a combination of mucus, blood, and feces all soaked in together. As Mary made her way down the hall, she began to notice, this is where it gives me chills. She began to notice that every single door was open, that every apartment was open. crimson footprints leading in and out of every one of them. And in some, she could see bodies, stripped and mutilated, lying in clear view, all with their throats slashed and symbols carved into their chests. Men, women, and children. One apartment door had a fire poker sticking through it. Mary tried to pull it out to use it as a weapon, not realizing in her state that it was dripping blood. Police reports would later state that the poker had been driven through a woman who was essentially nailed to the door with it, her body hanging on the other side. Mary made it to her apartment and saw that the door had been bashed in. The couch was overturned, the cupboards open, and the beds flipped. But there was no sign of her children. She started calling their names, even though she couldn't muster a full scream. She reported to police that she felt like she went blind at that moment. She couldn't see straight, was dizzy, and said it felt like someone was turning on and off the lights around her. Everything would go black and then light up again with her in a different location. Mary said she stepped into the elevator, but it wouldn't move. So she somehow made it down the stairs and into the lobby, which was a large open room with two glass doors in the front, mailboxes, I'll show you a picture later, mailboxes along the right side wall, and the elevator and open stairway in the back of the room. Mary apparently tripped about halfway to the front doors. She wasn't able to brace herself and ended up shattering her knee, rocketing pain through her whole body. Doctors say that this was actually what probably saved her life, as it jump-started her adrenaline and the pain snapped her from her panic. Mary just remembers howling for help and several people stepping into view outside the glass door, looking in to see what the commotion was, each wearing a suit and a different Muppet character mask.
What the fuck?
They stood there for a moment, staring, as if contemplating or talking, which Mary couldn't hear, and then they just walked away. So, in total, there were 82 people killed that night.
What? Wait, this is a true story?
Yep. 82 what? People killed, 43 men, 32 women, and 7 children. Every single apartment was broken into. Nothing was stolen. No one was raped. And no animals were found injured or killed, even though several apartments had pet food and accessories. Every hall on every floor had symbols written on them in blood. Local linguistic and religious experts were brought in, but nothing could be identified. It's assumed that whatever was written was done in a dead language or a made-up language, and it wasn't explored much further than that. Of course, That was a sarcastic, of course. It was thought that the killers were either let into the building or they came up the fire escape and crawled in one of the open hallway windows because there was no sign of tampering with the building's front door, no broken glass, and no alarms were set off. As soon as I saw the fire escape part, I was like, Marissa's going to be so freaked out by this.
I'm so paranoid. Yeah, but I'm like Bethy, man. I got weapons all over my goddamn apartment, so
try something. You really do. It terrifies me.
That's what happens when you listen to Ollie's podcast. You're like, I don't know, I may need a knife in the shower, so why don't I just leave this here?
Police said that they likely worked 1 to 2 people per floor and just went through the building, either kicking in doors or picking locks. It was reported that several of their victims were still in their beds, meaning they had been asleep when the murders broke in. Sadly, none of them showed signs of being killed in their sleep, though. Forensics reported that the killers would wait for them to wake up or would wake them up just to kill them. I put, can you imagine waking up to someone in a mask standing over your bed?
Yeah, I can. That's why I have a bunch of weapons.
That's like the scariest thing.
How has this not been made into a movie?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Sneeze. Like I stated, the building's phone lines had been cut, so no one could call for help. The front doors also had metal rubbings on them, which led authorities to believe that the killers chained the front and back doors while they were taking lives, meaning even if you got to the door, you weren't getting out.
It's glass, though, right?
It's glass.
Better start breaking that shit.
Exactly. Now, on to Mary Buckley's children. They were found clinging to a small plastic lip inside a water tank on the roof. Both were frozen and near hypothermic, but alive. After medical treatment, they told authorities that Bethy had brought them up to their roof and told them not to move from inside the tank until they got back down. Unfortunately, she was among the 82 victims that night.
Oh my God, Bethy is my, like, spirit animal. She?
Wait till part two, though.
Is, oh God.
There's some twists. Bethy, police only found the kids because the woman had punctured a small hole into the side of the tank and severed the ball cock that made the unit refill. So it was slowly draining, and they saw the water leaking from it. The killers were never found. There were no prints. There were no guns used, so no bullet casings or anything else other than boot prints, which were the same size on every floor.
Oh, damn.
Despite Mary telling police that the killers were all different heights and weights. Authorities say it's likely they all bought and wore the exact same boots to throw off the investigation. And it worked. Some 800 people were questioned over the course of 8 months, but nothing ever came of it. There were rumors of organized crime happening within the building, that many of the tenants were somehow involved in drug and prostitution trafficking, but there was no evidence of it and nothing was ever found. Other theories include the possibility of a cult initiation hit, which is where they believe the symbols came from, or what they call a high society joy killing, as the area was being quickly gentrified and it was common knowledge the young, wealthy residents moving in were not fond of those that refused to leave. To family and friends of the victims, it seemed the authorities were trying to bury the mass murder. Very abruptly, papers stopped covering any progress and the building was demolished. This caused a bit of an uproar, but quickly faded into the ether. Until 20 years later, when the luxury office building that was built where the apartments used to be became the center of another series of deaths, deaths that many say were urged by ghosts.
I don't really know what to say. I mean, oh my God.
How crazy is that?
That is insane. I will say, though, you are pretty anti-guns in the house. Do things like this...
I am anti-guns in the house.
...not have any sort of impact on you?
That's a good question.
Because they didn't have guns. So, like, Bethy... got a few shots in. Someone
she killed
got
somebody,
shot in
yeah.
the...
Yeah,
she killed him?
Yeah, she killed him. Shot him in the eye and the neck, yeah.
But they didn't find that body. The killer's body.
They
so
didn't...
they took that dude with him.
That's true.
What I mean.
I guess
he had
she
to
maybe
died,
she didn't.
But...
Yeah, but I would assume he's dead. There's no
oh,
report
yeah,
about
he had
it.
Shot
his
the
body wasn't
eye.
There, but yeah.
So, I mean, if you had guns, you could, in theory, stop them if you heard him coming in.
Yeah. I'm not... I'm it's I mean it really is tough because I do believe that you know you should defend your family and you
right.
should defend your home, but at the same time I feel like so many horrific things have been done because of the ease of getting guns in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that everyone should have their guns taken away. If you have a small gun for personal home protection, it's different than having, you know, one of those giant assault rifles.
Right.
I just don't like the idea of having guns in the house, primarily if I have children.
Really?
Yeah, I would hate... How would you feel if your kid accidentally shot himself?
I think that you would have to be smart about it. I think the kids who accidentally shoot themselves, the parents have not taken the right precautions. They're not educating their children about the guns. They're just locking them away in the home. Or it's just stupid accidents. I think you should, before you buy a gun, I don't know anything about like gun laws, so I'm definitely just talking out of my ass
just
here.
Spitballing.
Yeah. But like, I feel like you should take X amount of hours of like a gun safety class.
I agree.
I think
you
all of those
to
need
safety,
to be
yeah. thorough background
enforced
checks.
Before you're allowed to get a gun. So then you have a better kind of basis and foundation of educating your children about them.
And do you believe that something like assault rifle should be banned from personal use?
I do, yeah. But that being said, I'm not anti-gun. I could see myself having a handgun. You say you wouldn't with children. I say only if I had children, because the thought of being helpless to defend my children is such a terrifying one.
But you're not helpless. You're a black belt.
It doesn't matter, though. If someone comes in with a gun, you know what
I
mean?
You have a gun by your bed right now.
That's true.
Yeah, I know it's true. It's on my side where I sleep. I'm like, I'm not using this thing.
That's what I'm saying, though. I don't have, like, I want to be able to know that if something crazy happens in the middle of the night, I can wake up and have...
Yeah.
Be able to use deadly force against someone if need be. And I don't think someone is going to break into my home and they're not also going to have a weapon. So while, yes, I feel like I could defend myself in like kind of a hand-to-hand situation, I don't feel like that extends to children. You know what I mean? If I have two kids and if they have a weapon, that's going to be a lot harder.
I get it. Do you not think there's any... Do you not think the theory holds any water of, you know, if you come out with a gun, the person who's breaking in is more likely to shoot than if you don't have a weapon?
I'm not waiting to find out. If I've picked up a gun, I've made the choice that I'm going to use it.
I think what's funny is we had this conversation probably the first week or two we started dating.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing was, if I'm off on like location or something for a shoot and I come home early to surprise you, I don't want you shooting me.
I know that, but you were more like, I'm coming home at 4 a.m. I'm like, what the fuck you out at 4 a.m. doing that you're coming home to me?
My flight gets
and
in
also,
early.
Don't surprise someone at 4 a.m. Give me a heads up. Sure, surprise me at 6 p.m, but if you think you're just gonna creep up on me,
I've crept up on you in a very sweet, like loving way and like put my arm around you or something, or gave you a little pinch when we've been in the grocery store or we've been out volunteering.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple moments where you almost turned around and decked me because you didn't know who it
I've
was.
I've definitely warned you though, like it's fine when I'm like not feeling threatened, but if I'm like home alone. And I mean, we have keys to each other's apartments. If you were to ever let yourself in and my back is turned to you and you come up and try to hug me, I'm for sure going to try to beat the shit out of you. Like, I'm for sure thinking I'm about to be murdered.
Sure.
And I'm going to defend myself.
That's just, I would take that beating.
So I've told you, though, if you do that, though, you can't get mad at me if I try to break your nose. Like, that's just part of what's part of
I've
the consequences.
Learned. I've learned. Keep my distance. I announce myself. My name is Richard. I'm entering the apartment.
I've crossed the threshold. I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
I just think that there's
a
I don't know. Maybe we need to invent something like that then. Because I do think that obviously locking up weapons is a must. But then, of course, the problem is, well, how do you get to them quickly if they're like a situation comes up where you need it and you need it now?
Well, maybe we should invent something like that.
Yeah.
Like maybe like it's a ring you wear. And when you reach for the box, the ring is the only thing that'll let it open. Ooh. That's kind of a good idea. Hey, mine. Patent.
Called it. you heard it here first, folks.
the thing that we came to in our relationship, though, that the compromise was, didn't we say, like, we get you a rubber bullet gun that would take someone down?
But... Something still that's going to bring someone down. Right. Yeah. We didn't talk about knives. I will always have...
I mean, I gave you a knife
me.
As a
you
as a
did.
Gift.
It was very sweet for a Valentine's Day gift.
Yeah.
Like, you know me so well. Who else is like, here you go.
A little survival
Here's
knife.
Here's a fucking knife. Yeah.
With a flint. It came with a flint with as a well. Flint.
No, but I carry a hunting knife with me.
It's
when
very large.
when I'm not feeling great.
Yeah.
So that's why we compromised. I still get my knives. And then I get my little pellet gun too.
Yeah, but I do, you know, I want... The knives need to be up high enough that the kids can't reach them.
Just, I'm going to have knives all over the house hidden.
But, all right. Well.
Damn, that story is so interesting. Good find.
I thought that it would, honestly, I heard about it. It doesn't matter how I heard about it. It was just like, somebody's like, have you heard of this? And somebody else is like, I don't know if that's true. And somebody's like, it's definitely true. Here's all the evidence. And anyway, it's
you're
long.
Definitely talking about people that I know and probably hate. That's why you're like, doesn't matter who I heard it from.
No, I was talking about like Reddit. Like it's nobody you know. No.
I have never heard of this.
Yeah, ooh, it's pretty crazy.
I'm very fascinated.
Well, wait until next week because it gets crazier.
No, I won't, because we're in a relationship, so the podcast people can wait. But the second this is off, I'm like, you're going to fucking tell me exactly what happens.
There's a lot of craziness that comes, a lot of twists. So we find out a lot more about the reason it happened. And it's so interesting.
I'm excited.
Yeah, the reason it was covered up.
Good job.
Anyway, well, good job to you. Definitely brought me down and made me feel pretty horrible after your story.
Well,
and also very angry.
Brought us down to a whole new low. I didn't know we could go. So thank you for that.
I just was like, it's an apartment story and they mention a fire escape.
Yeah, I know. The things I fear.
The fear, things you fear.
Because
yeah.
My apartment is right next to, you could come up the fire escape and you would be at my living room.
Yeah, that's true.
You could just let yourself in.
Yep. But
don't, please okay. Don't.
all right.
Well, you can follow us on social media. SOTWpodcast.com
and then SOTW_podcast. Guys, yeah. Please make sure to
like,
follow,
subscribe,
and review,
rate,
share,
comment.
Right. You're out.
Damn it.
But please make sure to, you know, give us a 5-star rating, give us a little review, and share us with your friends because it really does help. Yeah, we also want to thank everybody who participated in our
fundraiser.
Yeah, last week. We'll talk more about that next week once we actually make the donation and all that sort of stuff. But we wanted to give a big shout out to everyone who participated and who shared our episode. It really means a lot.
Yeah,
so.
That was okay. Fun. Hopefully it just makes us want to do more stuff like that. So thanks, guys. And really sorry to bum you out. So good night.
Sweet dreams.